I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man.
I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
How are you doing, podcats? Adam Buxton here with my best dog friend Rosie, taking a walk through the icy, waterlogged fields of East Anglia, UK. We enjoyed a day of torrential rain yesterday. It was like a scene out of a disaster movie. And now there's quite a bit of flooding around. Plus, the temperature has plummeted. Oh, and it is bitey. When I came out on this walk at the end of the afternoon on Christmas Eve 2020, it was all quite nice. George Lucas Star Wars prequel, tacky sunset. But in just 5 minutes, the black cloud has rolled in, the wind has picked up, and all the signals are pointing to me keeping this short and heading home for a cup of tea and a mince pie. That's a shame, obviously, because I'd written quite an amazing 45-minute monologue. Just looking back over this year, thinking about some of the lessons we've learned, and then there was going to be a short test. But sadly, that's not practical because it is so freezing that I'm in physical pain. How are you doing, though? Not too bad, I hope. Welcome to podcast number 145. Have I said that yet? I don't think so. Anyway, it features, in case you didn't realise, a rambling, festive conversation with my old friend, the talented director, Joe Cornish. He made Attack the Block and The Kid Who Would Be King. And he's working on a fantasy series with Netflix that he hasn't really told me that much about. It sounds great, though. Anyway, we don't talk about any of that. I don't think I need to set up what we do talk about too much. I will say that we made an effort to keep the language as family-friendly and festive as possible, although stricter families may want to tread carefully in certain places. It's nothing too bad, I don't think. But some parts of the dream that Joe had, which he wrote a song about, might be a little confusing for some families. I don't know. Back at the end, for a very small slice of festive goodbye waffle. But right now, with Joe Cornish. Here we go, ho ho.
Ramble chat, a Christmas ramble chat. We'll focus first on this, then concentrate on that. Come on, let's chew the fat and have a ramble chat. Put on your fluffy winter coat and find your Santa hat.
Yes, yes, yes.
Ho, 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 ho.
I'm going to have a little drinky because it's Christmas. I'm going to drink responsibly, but I am going to have a little wee drinky. Ooh. And this is from my pirate bottle.
That's a cork that's already been opened because it's moist around the edges.
This is the cognac that I've been supping when I do live podcast appearances over Zoom.
Thin end of a wedge. You're going to be like Jeffrey Bernard. Relying on drinking when appearing professionally in public is a slippery slope.
It's not a good idea.
It's a fun slippery slope, like a flume in a water park.
I would never drink while I'm talking to a guest on my podcast.
What are you doing now?
Well, you're not really a guest. You're
No, that's true.
This is an Adam and Joe episode.
True, good. Well, drink up.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
I'm drinking some Coke Zero.
Yeah, quite right. Drink responsibly. Yeah. Don't feel pressurized to join in or do anything.
No.
Just give yourself a break this holiday season.
You know, one of the major discoveries for me this year was Coke Zero. A writer I was working with drank some in a meeting, and she gave me a sip. Have you ever had it?
Yeah.
I mean, it tastes like Coke, but it's got no sugar.
Right, but it's got a strong sort of sugary boink to it, doesn't it?
It really does. It's got the caffeine, but it's got zero sugar. And this is no kind of sponsorship thing. What it does have, though, is quite a strong laxative effect.
Oh, really?
I think. But I don't mind that. I feel double cleansed.
Well, it's nice to be regular.
It is nice to be regular. But you don't want to have two in succession in a long meeting, otherwise you might shit your pants.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, by the way, that's fine what you just said, and I'm not going to shame you or anything for using that.
The swearing.
The swearing. S-word. But let's try and keep it as clean as possible.
Good idea, because it's Christmas.
Because it's Christmas.
And neither Santa, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, any of the three kings, or any of the farm animals in the manger would enjoy that kind of vowel language. In reality, we are doing this over a Zoom link, but in our Christmas fantasy, we're not. But there's one element of this that has to sit in reality, which is present giving.
Present giving.
Yeah.
So many of the conventions of the podcast in the past have fallen away somewhat. I'm afraid to say that there are few of our regular features because we haven't got messages from listeners. Hasn't been possible for practical reasons. But the present exchanging is still very much a feature. And because we are at a physical remove, we will be exchanging audio gifts.
Oh,
that was Joe's idea.
Yeah.
I loved that idea.
Yeah,
I thought it was great.
I was very excited that you loved it. I was like, is he going to like it? Is he going to like it?
Loved it. Absolutely. I went into my wife and I said, wife, do you know what J-Corn's just come up with? I was worried about the whole present giving factor on the Christmas podcast. J-Corn just suggested that we exchange audio gifts over the internet. What do you think of that?
Is that real? Is that true?
Yeah, she thought it was great. And it was a very sexy evening that we had afterwards. So maybe I will start by giving you an audio gift right now.
That would be really, really lovely.
Okay, cool.
The only issue is with this whole audio gift thing is I've, like, in the past, I've been pretty good with gifts.
That's
I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I will because no one else does it. I've been pretty generous with presents.
True.
Thoughtful, written stuff on the train on the way down, gone to Hamley's, gone to Morley's in Brixton, to the toy department, really gone out of my way to get you stuff. This year, I think I've got three presents for you.
Three audio gifts.
Yeah, one of them's just me talking.
Okay.
Not this talking, but a different sort of talking later.
That's absolutely cool. Because yes, in the past, you have been more than generous and thoughtful and well prepared for this podcast. And so you are definitely allowed a pass this year.
But hey, it's the quality, not the quantity of the presents. I mean, you might have loads, but they might all be rubbish.
Well,
I might just have a couple, but they might be humdingers.
See what you think. I am quietly confident about this first one. This is a musical collaboration between myself and a real band, an actual band with a record contract and several albums under their belt.
Wow.
And critical success. Commercial steps. Success.
Steps. Steps.
It's not Steps, although I did reach out to them.
S Club Juniors.
No, and it's not Scooch.
The Flying Pickets?
No.
Hmm.
The Flying Pickets were busy.
Well, that's it. I've named all the big ones.
Yeah. It's The Staves. Now, some of you listening will already be familiar with The Staves. They are comprised of three sisters, Emily, Jessica, and Camilla. They are from the Staveley Taylor family, based in Watford. So that's how they get their name, the Staves. Do you also know what the definition of a stave is?
It's some kind of musical annotation. Isn't it a stave?
Exactly. In Western music, a stave or staff is a set of five horizontal lines and four spaces that each represent a different musical pitch. Anyway, the Staves are terrific. And I think I became aware of them first because we played one of their videos on Bug. And then I found out that they were fans of Bug and listened to the radio show when we used to be on the radio, you and I. And now I think they listen to this podcast. So when I reached out to them, they kindly responded and collaborated with me on a piece of music, especially for you, J-Corn.
Wow, that's incredible. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear it.
They're so talented, these people, I'm telling you. And it's really quite cool. And I was really excited when they came back to me very quickly with a response. Mm. And they played the music that you can hear in the background, the instrumentation yeah. there, the brass, the piano, the guitar that you can hear. Their voices are beautiful, angelic. They sing these lovely close harmonies. Their music generally recalls, as far as I'm concerned, elements of classic acts. Fleetwood Mac, Joni Mitchell, Nick Drake, Carole King, that kind of thing. Oh.
Set the bar low.
And
why don't you?
They chose to do a version of the song One More Sleep Till Christmas, composed by one of our favourite composers, Paul Williams.
Really?
Originally performed by Kermit Frog as Bob Cratchit in The Muppets Christmas Carol, 1992.
Great movie.
They love that movie, The Staves. Do you know, I have to confess, I've never actually seen it.
You're an idiot.
I'm an idiot, and I'm going to watch it tonight, Christmas night. So the instrumentation, the melody, the arrangement, etc. is related to One More Sleep Till Christmas, composed by Paul Williams. However, I have changed the lyrics in order to fully celebrate Cornballs at Christmas.
There is a tall and handsome man who comes this time of year with tasty Christmas waffles you can stuff inside your ear. With chuckle gifts and laughter beans for girls and boys and in-betweens. Hooray! It's time for Joey Christmas Cornballs.
What's Cornballs got in his festive waffle hamper?
I hope it's deep-level cinema knowledge.
Is it just me who finds him very attractive?
No, silly. Everybody does.
Ooh. All year he works so hard inside the factory of dreams, creating timeless narratives to brighten up our screens. And even when the world is tough and some say dreams are not enough, Christmas Cornballs just serves up another plate of dreams.
As well as Cornballs, he is known as Jay Corn.
La la la.
Or maybe Jobo, or sometimes Corny Corns. Not many people call him Corn Dog.
And please don't call him Haughty. That's inaccurate and naughty.
Joe, Joey, Joe, ho, 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 Joey, Joe, Joey, Joe, ho, 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 Joe, ho.
Love it. It's my favourite bit in the middle eight.
Just a taste of Cornballs is delightful as champagne.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel his quirky outlook fizzing up your brain. I'd say his friendship is the best gift any person knows, but it depends on how the doodle story goes.
Oh.
If it's like last year, then I formally withdraw this Cornball song.
Oh, that was sensational. I mean, it was literally sensational. It caused sensations to sort of zap through me as I listened to it. You know, it had very powerful lyrics. And at the beginning, I thought, like, when you say, am I the only person who finds him attractive? And then one of the staves says, no, silly, everybody does. I thought, well, that sounds a bit sarcastic.
No, they weren't being sarcastic.
Well, that's what I thought, because then they really dug in a lot with the praise. Then there was a middle eight, which I really appreciated because it let some air in. It just relaxed the whole thing, and it showed that this was a really honest piece of music that didn't need to try too hard. It could afford to just be slow and silent and
that's Jess playing the guitar there.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Beautiful.
And then it had a modulation, didn't it?
Maybe two.
That was amazing. Very beautiful. I'm really honoured and touched. Yeah, it really touched all the bases, didn't it? Good looking, Dream Factory, all my nicknames and some things that I'm seldom called, which is important to cover. You wrote the lyrics, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about writing the lyrics. Where were you? What were you feeling? How long did it take? That kind of thing. Talk to me about that.
I was under a lot of pressure. I left it till the very last minute, and I think I churned them out in about half an hour.
What do you mean? What pressure? What you had a stave deadline?
Yeah, because they're busy. They're an actual band.
Yeah.
And they have lives, and there's three of them.
Yeah.
And I was asking them for this favour fairly close to Christmas.
Yeah.
And they were very generous with their time.
Yeah.
But they had a deadline, and I went right up against it. And in the end, I got so stressed out, and I just thought, no, I can't do this. This is a disaster. That I just took a deep breath, You know, geniuses always give you tips like on Masterclass on the internet.
Mm. What to do when you face a blank page kind of thing.
Face a blank page. And, you know, it's easy for all these people who are successful in their fields. They're always tossing out little nuggets of wisdom and hacks and tips and all this kind of thing. And I've always resented them because I find them very hard to actually incorporate in your real routine. It's all fine once you're successful to retrospectively tell everyone how you did it. But the one thing I've learned is that it's always good to go for a walk. Always good. Even if you feel like, I can't go for a walk, I haven't got time, I've got to do this thing, that's exactly when you should go
for a walk.
It's
true, yeah.
And so I went for a walk with Dog, and it was a beautiful day, and we just went out for half an hour, and the lyrics that you just heard in that incredible song, I mean, this is going to be hard to believe, but they just came to me within that half hour period while we were out walking.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah. Because if you think, are you thinking about the lyrics?
Well, yeah, I mean, lines such as, there is a tall and handsome man who comes this time of year with tasty Christmas waffles you can stuff inside your ear.
Yeah,
that's really, really good stuff.
That is good, isn't it? And what about, just a taste of corn balls is delightful as champagne. You can feel his quirky outlook fizzing up your brain. Because that's sort of you in a nutshell, in a way, isn't it? Because you've got quite a quirky outlook.
You know, I have to admit it, but yes, I do. I like to look askance on the day's news. No, a sideways look on the day's news is something I like to do. I don't like to look at it head on.
No. So it's all there, and all of it just came to me. It was as if I was being given an early Christmas gift by Creative Masterclass Santa.
Pressure on me for the doodle story, though.
Yes, brother.
Yeah, like the song's going to be formally withdrawn.
Yeah.
Depending on the end of the doodle story.
Because at the end of last year's podcast, you conveyed about one extra line of the doodle story with Tom
Cruise.
I think
a word.
And then there was some, what appeared to be genuinely furious.
Yeah, there was some messages. Really probably angry people.
Yeah.
So we just have to wait and see. Just have to listen along and see what happens at the end of the podcast. Because there have been major developments, right?
There have, yeah.
Early this year. We'll say no more. We'll just tease it. Man, that was a wonderful gift. Can I say thank you very, very much to the Staves for doing that? I'll treasure it forever.
Yeah.
And I particularly appreciate the fact that all the lyrics Adam wrote for you reflect your opinions too, as expressed in the sincerity of your singing voices.
I would like to thank the Staves too. Emily, Jessica and Camilla.
I hadn't finished.
Thank you so much. Oh, what were you going to say?
I say I'll be over on Monday to hang out with you guys because you clearly really dig me.
Oh, they said to say they're actually away.
Well, I don't mind. I can wait. I'll be waiting.
They're away for a while, quite a while.
I can wait. Because I've really never had anybody sing a song for me expressing so much adulation.
Also, they're all married. They all recently got married to quite violent...
But there's a lot... Marriage, what does it mean these days?
Quite violent criminals. Like, the criminals aren't violent with them, but they are very jealous and they kill people like you.
But clearly, listening to the song, I think the Staves would be on my side and they'd defend me. And they're going to know the ins and outs of what they're violent criminal... They're going to know their weaknesses, their habits.
How much further are we going to go with this?
Where they keep their weapons.
This fantasy.
They'll know where they keep their weapons and they'll know the trigger words that could send them into like a psychotic trance.
It feels like one of us has to kind of give in. Who's going to be the one that gives in and just
run away on a plane to a desert island?
Stops doing the fantasy about you going around to see the stage.
Songs. We'll live on an island with them singing songs about me.
All right. Is that the end of the... You're going to see the Staves fantasy.
Listen, if we were still on the radio together, that would have lasted 7 or 8 hours. Now that you do an authoritative podcast, you've cut it short.
Now that I am the master of concision. Yeah. But links in the description of the podcast to a beautiful Staves playlist for those of you who are new to the world of the Staves. Check it out. They're so good. And there's a great Spotify playlist which contains tracks as well from their excellent new album, Good Woman.
Now it just feels like you've done some sort of deal with them.
I know, it does sound like that, and I apologise because they didn't ask me to say all this. I just thought it would be polite.
Yeah, but I'm starting to wonder whether they meant what they sang.
If I'm going out, then I wear a mask. With my friends and family, I wear a mask. Having sexual intercourse, I wear a mask. And when I'm on my own, I also wear a mask. I have to wear a mask cause I am toxic. Terrible things are spilling out of me. I also wear a mask cause you are toxic. A tiny bit of you could be deadly. Mask, mask, put on your mask. If you care about the human race. Mask, mask, always wear a mask. Cover up your frightening deadly face.
Okay, I'm going to give you a gift. It comes in the form of a quiz.
Oh.
It's just a quiz I'm going to read to you.
Do it.
Okay, so this is my quiz. It's a very short quiz and it's very stupid. Which of the following media developments would you most like to keep hold of once the pandemic has ended?
Oh, great quiz.
Thanks a lot. Number one, TV studio audiences made up of multiple faces on flat screen TVs with strange tinny slightly delayed laughter and applause. Okay, do you want me to go through them all before you make your choices?
Yeah.
Number two, no studio audiences, just crew members, producers and floor managers laughing extra loudly from behind the cameras.
Zoo style.
You can see that in particular on Jimmy Fallon's show. And if you want to see number one, TV studio audiences made up of multiple faces on flat screen TVs in action, then I think Ellen DeGeneres is doing it. And I think they did it on the Royal Variety performance a few weeks ago. There was like a whole fake theater of TV screens, people
yes.
on TV screens.
They did do that. It was really
so
crazy.
Odd.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss that when it goes away. And I want it to stop as soon as possible. All
okay,
of that.
Okay. I've got three more. Number three, all interviewees appearing via low quality video feeds from their houses with their recently published books prominently displayed on the shelves behind them.
I've done that myself. I haven't been on any TV shows, but I have made a few podcast appearances and I spent at least half an hour arranging the background beforehand to include a copy of Ramble Book and also to include a couple of other books that made me look cleverer.
Right. What, turning some of them so the covers face forward like it was a shop display?
Yeah. Like I sort of arranged them as if I hadn't deliberately placed them there. Like, oh yeah, I was just reading a bit of Bayard Rustin. And I just left it on the shelf there. And oh, yes, my Montaigne book. I left the complete essay there.
What a knob. Number four, guests in chat shows sitting a very long way apart.
Hate that. I think that might be the most depressing thing. I would rather people weren't in the same room. Graham Norton, which is a show that I normally enjoy, his chat show, seeing them all spread apart just made me so sad.
It's odd, isn't it? See, they did a Jonathan Ross's show came back the other night and they did it on that as well. They do a thing on this, no, not this morning, on Good Morning with Ben Shepherd stroke Piers Morgan and Susanna Reid.
Wait, Ben Shepherd's been stroking Piers Morgan?
Mm-hmm. They do a thing where they're split screen, you know, they split screen them, but they put them on as if they're sitting shoulder to shoulder, right?
Yeah.
And they've kind of got a, I think I'm right in saying, they've got a Christmas tree, but they've obviously put two Christmas trees, one behind each presenter, but they're identical Christmas trees, so that when they do the split screen, the left half of one Christmas tree and the right half of the other join together to create what looks like one Christmas tree between them. Do you get what I mean?
Like a Mad Magazine fold-in.
Exactly. But it's quite disturbing because they'll be chatting along, then one of them will raise an arm, and the arm will just sort of weirdly vanish into the middle of the Christmas tree. But I thought, good on you for trying. You know, at least yeah. it looks like normality.
One thing I'm surprised that no one seems to have done is more kind of trick photography, although I would imagine that would screw around with the size of the guests. But you know what I mean? Like when they did Elf, they had a lot of funny foreshortening and trick photography going on.
Like Lord of the Rings style.
Yeah, to make Will Ferrell look much bigger.
How would that help? So what, you'd have two people who were sitting apart from each other, but then you'd shoot sort of...
You'd shoot it at an angle so that they look as if they're much closer.
Yeah, but one of them would inevitably look much bigger because one of them would be closer to the camera.
Yeah, but you get the big guests to go at the back, so they all end up
so
looking at the same
side. So you do it depending on the size of the guest.
Yeah, you have to. That would be the new booking policy.
Or you like dress Jonathan Ross as Gandalf and he's just much bigger than all of his guests.
Anything is better than just having everyone scattered around. It's just depressing.
But you see, if they don't make it clear they're obeying the rules, then people get uppity, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Like they've got to put captions on saying, you know, this was filmed before the thingy. Or like I saw a children's TV quiz show called The Dog Ate My Homework the other day. And that had a caption that came up saying something along the lines of studio audience response from previous show. So they'd actually used shots of an audience and their laughter from a pre-pandemic show and intercut them and used the audio over a post-pandemic recording.
Right.
Which is a lot for a child viewer to get their heads around. But maybe the producers thought, well, kids won't understand what we're doing. Adults will. And then the show will just look like it's normal.
Yeah. Joy imported from a happier age.
Yeah, that's what they should have put. Do you want number five?
I want loads, mate.
Interviewers in the street standing a long way away from their interviewees while holding a mic on the end of a very, very long stick. So that's your five. The question is, which would you like to hang on to after the pandemic? Which of them do you think actually enhance the viewing experience or the show that you're watching? Number one, studio audience made up of faces on TV.
No.
Number two, no studio audience at all, just crew members laughing from behind the camera, extra loud.
No.
Number three, all interviewees appearing via low-quality video feeds with their own recently published books on display behind them.
I mean, I don't mind that. I think it's sort of occasionally entertaining to see in people's houses.
You're right. It is entertaining, is it? That's the best one. And also there's the famous bits where their kiddies come into the...
That's right.
Shots and
like they had a guy. They had a guy on Newsnight the other night, some Tory councillor who was talking about the restrictions and the tier system, and all I could think about was, look at the size of the guy's printer. He had this monolithic printer behind him that was just dwarfing him completely. It was incredible. I was like, what are you printing? You got a whole magazine being printed from that thing.
Presumably, some famous people go the other way, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can see people who've done that. You can see people filming themselves against a blank wall or something.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the visual aspect of it is pretty tragic because some people are using slightly older laptops, so the webcams and the microphones are really not up to the job. And so you're getting this kind of antediluvian tech that was worse than anything in the 50s ever was. Like a remote link up to the moon in 1969 was better than some of the stuff you're getting on the news programs these days, J. Cole.
Passionate opinion, Adam. We really value it on this show. Thanks a lot for coming on. Would you come back on Monday and talk about pet passports?
Yes, would please. You? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks very much, Adam in Norwich. It's just coming up to 4:30. Here's the traffic and travel with Cynthia Poopy Pants.
And so what was the last one? So I'm
the last ones were number four, guests in chat show sitting a very long way apart.
Yeah,
you
hate
expressed
it.
Your
get
revulsion of that. Number five, interviewers in the street standing a long way away from their interviewees while holding a mic on the end of a very long stick. I think they should keep doing that.
I agree. I like that.
Just because there's slapstick possibilities, you know?
Exactly. Don't get rid
of that.
You've
got to keep that. You've got to keep that. Well, thanks for taking my quiz. That's
loved
the end
it.
Of my quiz. Can you think of any others?
How about, are you going to be sad when they no longer have adverts?
That talk about difficult times?
Yeah. That are like, it hasn't been easy these last few months. Homeschooling those kids. Finally learning to cook more than just fish fingers. Piling on the pounds. Trying to take them off again with those internet workout videos.
This advert knows my life. It knows who I am and what I feel.
Finding out what's really important.
Yes.
Gran really appreciated that picture you and the kids drew of her that you put on your Instagram page. At least once you'd finally explained what Instagram was.
Gran!
And when was the last time you got to sit down with all the kids and watch their favourite superhero film? But you know what the funny thing is? You're the superhero.
Oh, whatever they're selling me, I'm going to buy it.
Obviously, you're not as big a superhero as the frontline workers. No one's saying that. They're the real heroes. But still, you're so amazing and we're so proud of you that for the next 6 to 8 months, we have slashed prices on quad bikes.
Let's all buy quad bikes!
Because you're a hero and you deserve a quad bike. Please get one.
By a fucking
this sounds quad unsympathetic to people in the quad bike business, and I don't mean to be.
You're right. I will not miss those adverts. Why don't you get the Staves to write a song about that one?
You're listening to the Adam Buxton Podcast. Listen when you want. Unlike a radio podcast. Listen on the train now. On an aeroplane now. Listen in a tractor. Form of transport's not a factor. Listen on the first date. With another primate. Listen when you're jogging. Straight to your noggin. You're listening to the Adam Buxton Podcast. If you don't like it,
so you emailed me a few weeks before this podcast. I'm going to find the email from Adam Buxton. Okay, so here's the email you sent to me. Hey man.
Good start.
Blah, 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 blah. Possible idea, colon, something about dreams. How do you feel about doing a song? I confess this is because I was already thinking of doing a very short song about a dream, literally a 60-second thing. So that's all I had to go on.
Yeah.
Something about dreams. And the subject of dreams makes me nervous because famously there's something you're not... You know those stupid sort of dinner party rules people sometimes come up with, like stuff not to say because it's boring? And like talking about your dreams is one of the classic things that's always much, much, much more interesting to you than it is to other people.
That's right.
But then I thought... Occasionally I write down dreams, like when I have a really, really powerful dream, I write them down. So I went back to look at my dreams, and I have had a couple of corkers, so I thought maybe it would be good. So I wrote a song based on a couple of my dreams. But what were you thinking of? What was your angle on this?
Very similar. I mean, I remember towards the beginning of the first lockdown in this year of 2020, a few people I heard talking about the fact that their dreams had become very vivid after the domestic routine had really taken hold 3 weeks into the lockdown or something. I heard a lot of people saying, are you getting mad dreams? Because I really am. And I think most people seem to agree that it was the combination of this uncertainty and anxiety about the situation combined with maybe, I don't know, excess alcohol intake or whatever it might be. But a lot of people, for whatever reason, were experiencing strange dreams. And one of the ones that I woke up from was a real old school anxiety dream that I hadn't had for years and years. So for this one, I went to my computer. Sometimes I will create a jingle or a song using just a bit of library music and I'll extemporize over the top. This was not one of those occasions. This is one of the rare occasions where I actually constructed the track myself and I played all the synthesizers. And
what are you hoping to gain by telling us this? Sympathy?
Respect, I suppose. Maybe this is a good opportunity to thank Native Instruments, who supplied me with some VSTs this year, and I said that I would give them a shout out.
Really?
Anyway, check out the amazing range of VST instruments from Native Instruments. I endorse them. I'm not sure if that was one of them on the track.
A lot of plugging in this Christmas podcast.
Yeah, that's what Christmas is about.
We've had the Staves, we've had Coke Zero, and now we've got VST synthesizers. There you go.
That's a traditional
things
Christmas
are changing.
Plug fest.
Plug fest.
So, do you want me to go first?
Sure.
This song was about a dream I had in which we were putting on a play. And I write about the play in my book, in Ramble Book. It was a production of Bugsy Malone. We really went to town on it. I was playing Fat Sam, or Big Bone Sam, as I preferred to identify, because I didn't particularly relish the fat shaming that was going on when you cast me.
Hey, the fat shaming is in the text.
Anyway, it turned out to be fun, and it was such an incredibly memorable and joyous experience, very intense experience. So I dream about it still, and this is the song that came out of that.
Oh, I had a dream I was back at school, putting on a play with my friends. It was the opening night, but I did not know my lines. We had spent months and months painting sets and making costumes and posters for the play, but we had not rehearsed the play. I didn't know what I was supposed to say. And yet the rest of the cast knew all of their words
songs in the play, and they were shaking their heads as the curtain went up, and I was still asking what I should say. Then suddenly I knew what to do. I sat on stage and did April.
Is that what happened in the dream?
Yeah.
Did you wake up at that point, or did the dream continue after you made your deposit on the stage?
No, I woke up, I think, with a tremendous scuff.
Was it like a Nightmare on Elm Street and you brought the poo from the dream into reality?
No, no, you, it
you
wasn't
woke
like
up
that.
With a poo
I'm
in
glad
hand.
To say. Anyway, so did that take you back?
I thought that was terrific. I mean, I like the simplicity of the song. It was really telling the story in a very direct way, and it had a surprised ending that I like very much. Do you want to hear mine?
Yes, please.
So, like I said, when I have a particularly crazy dream, I grab my laptop and type it in. So I've got quite a few here, but I've whittled it down to the sexiest ones.
Ooh.
Because Christmas is an erotic time.
Of course it
and
is.
And I feel that listeners might want a little bit of something to warm their cockles and, you know, put a bit of shine on their baubles.
Bit of sparkle.
So anyway, erotic dreams. So here's one titled Erotic Kylie Minogue Dream. Last night I dreamt I'd convinced Kylie Minogue and Nick Cave that I was a feral child and to adopt me. I lived in their house in burlap pajamas, reading the New York Review of Books with crooked fingers as if I was just looking at the pictures and grunting and flailing about. I'm pretending I'm a feral child, but they don't know I'm not.
That's very specific.
When they go out to see a movie, I drop the act, lie on their sofa and watch TV. When they come back, I go feral again. Kylie takes pity on me. She lies on her side, unbuttons her shirt and breastfeeds me.
Whoa,
it's
hang
very
on a
erotic.
Second. Merry yeah. Christmas and everything, but where did that...
Because I just had a baby. There was a lot of breastfeeding going on in the house.
Right, okay. I didn't realize you were so heavily invested in the lore of Kylie and Nick Cave.
Well, I'd watched that Nick Cave movie. What is it called? Once More with Feeling, the 3D black and white one, which is incredibly good. Mm-hmm. And I'd watched it in 3D, and it obviously just, you know, that's what dreams do, don't they? They take the sort of lucky dip of your recent experiences or past experiences and then just assemble something from randomly grabbed bits.
Right,
and bobs.
It's a little bit of an impression remix, isn't it?
Yeah, with a little peppering of your weird psychoses or neuroses over
slash
the top.
Slash desires, yeah.
Slash desires. Who wouldn't want to be breastfed by Kylie? So that was one. And then another one was more homoerotic. The title is Homoerotic George Michael and Matt Goss Dream. Tonight I dreamt about George Michael and Andrew Ridgeley at the height of their 80s fame, hanging out on a street corner in London, with Bros at the height of their fame. Obviously, in reality, their fame wasn't concurrent, but the dream converged their moments of fame. In the dream, their career peaks were concurrent. George is secretly gay and fancies Matt Goss, although no one knows it. Matt Goss is a bit thick, but very good-looking and happy-go-lucky. So George convinces him to try a fun trick where he says, "Now listen, Matt, did you know that if two people lie on top of each other and rub their bodies together in a room where the lights are off, it can generate enough static electricity to make the lights go on?"
Is this something that someone told you in real life?
No, it's just in the dream. Matt Goss agrees to try this, but it doesn't work, so George tells him they have to do it harder for longer. Where did that come from?
That must be based on real science, though. I mean, that makes sense. That has the ring of scientific truth. I think if Christopher Nolan made a film based on that, you would think, yeah, that sounds right. The science sounds solid.
I was very excited by that dream. I told lots of people about it. I texted a couple of friends about it the next day. I'm not sure what they thought of me. Because it seemed like such a specific and sexy and unusual dream.
Yeah.
So anyway, so my song is about those two dreams, yeah?
Oh, man.
So what I was going for here was, I thought, like, well, what are the classic dream songs? Mr. Sandman, right? Who's that by? It's a female a cappella.
The Cordettes.
Group. Right. So I'm trying to kind of do a sound alike of that. I was going for a sort of Flying Pickets a cappella kind of vibe. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it too late for something to be Christmas number one? Because Flying Pickets was Christmas number one, wasn't it? Is it too late?
No, it's not too late. Let's get it to number one.
Fingers crossed. Here we go.
I had had a dream I was living with Nick Cave and Kylie Minogue.
Boom, 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 boom.
I was a feral child, she was my sexy mama, next thing I know.
Boom, 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 boom.
She took off her shirt, popped out a boob, I swear this is true.
Boom, 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 boom.
She was feeding me breast milk, making me happy, it was lovely but lewd.
Boom, boom.
My next dream was kinda homoerotic and it featured Matt Goss.
Bum, 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 bum.
George Michael was trying to have it away with the lead singer of Brass.
Bum, bum.
Matt didn't know George was gay, but George got his way with an electrical line.
Bum, bum.
He said it might sound silly, but if we rub our willies, we can make the light shine.
Bum, 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 bum.
I don't know what these dreams mean, but if I had to guess, I would say that perhaps. I've got personal problems deep down in my brain that come out during naps. But I really don't mind, cause whenever it's time to drift off to sleep, I know that I'll be totally free to be dementedly me.
Good bit sincere at the end there.
Yes.
Yeah.
The only place that you can be yourself is in your unconscious mind.
It's tragic but true.
So much being forced down there to maintain yeah. a public face, a veneer of what you consider to be or what society has yeah. told you yeah. is acceptable.
Where else would George Michael and Matt Goss rub their bodies together to try and create enough static to make a light bulb glow?
In a music video.
But in my dreams.
And in your dreams. Well, that, I mean, that is definitely, that's got Christmas number one written all over it.
You know, it's they're weird dreams, but both have a sort of warmth to them.
Definitely.
The maternal glow of a mother feeding a middle-aged man pretending to be a feral child, and two of Britain's most valued
teen pop stars
demonstrating
furiously
basic
frotting
physics.
In order to create enough energy to power a light source.
Merry Christmas.
The holiday horn, it goes to
have two carrots. Go to the toilet, take your time. Holiday time.
Do you want another gift from me?
Yes, please.
So it's been a banner year for Buckles, I think.
Do you reckon?
It's been a big year for you. Yeah, the launch of Ramble Book.
Yeah, but it was a little bit muted. I mean, there's been the pandemic and...
Yeah, but it was a smash. And there was a Buckles Media Blitz mid-year, wasn't there? It felt to me... I mean, maybe I'm extra sensitive because I keep my eyes out. But it felt to me like you were all over the media. You were Book of the Week on Radio 4.
That was a big deal.
That's a big deal.
That was overground. That resulted yeah. in people I hadn't heard from for many, many years getting in touch and saying, hey, I heard your book. It was nice.
I very much enjoyed hearing a chapter about our school days.
Oh, yeah.
On Radio 4 at lunchtime while I was making the tea. I thought maybe they would just focus on the stuff about your dad. But I'm pleased they put in a J-Corn chapter.
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah. they had to have a J-Corn chapter. Yeah. That was an course, important stipulation.
So, yeah, big year. But one of the things I really enjoyed was your interview with a very, very good DJ on 5 Live called Nihal, whose show I've been on, who does quite in-depth interviews with people.
Oh, yes. Nihal Arthur Nayaka, I think is how you pronounce his name. And, yeah, Radio 5. And he used to be... He was a rapper. He was in Collapsed Lung.
Really?
Yeah, they had a hit with Eat My Goal. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah. He's really good. He does a very, very good show. As I say, I went on it myself. But sometimes when you've got a full day of press and you turn up at something like that, you're not quite sure to expect. Like, I remember it taking me by surprise how in-depth it was and how knowledgeable he was. And
how
serious he took me in a really nice way. But he did the same with you. He really went deep. And he talked about, you know, it was quite emotional talking about your dad and your career and stuff like that, right? Do you remember it being quite a profound interview?
Yeah, I mean, I'd heard him before and I liked him, otherwise I wouldn't have agreed to do it. But it was the middle of the afternoon and I did think like, oh, well, this is going to be sort of knockabout and it'll probably be 5 minutes of just...
It was live, right?
It was live, yeah. And you dial in and I did it remotely, obviously. And he went in fairly quickly within the first couple of minutes to talking about my relationship with my dad and how I dealt with the grief of losing him and all this kind of stuff. And it was like, whoa, I had to really scramble to recalibrate.
But yes.
It was good. It was a good conversation.
But it made me laugh at the end because he just said something at the end that made me laugh and your reaction to it made me laugh. Here's a clip of it.
Considering how many podcasts there are out there and the fact that yours is the 49th most popular in the UK, I mean, that's an extraordinary testament to how good you are at what you do. Because, you know...
49th?
Don't worry, I'll move up, I'm sure. But, you know, considering how many hundreds of thousands... Everyone's got a podcast, haven't they? Everyone's got a podcast. I know, I've got a couple of them. And they're certainly not the 49th most popular in the UK. Yours is.
So he's obviously being nice. He's a really nice guy. He's being nice. But I think, as far as I know, the way the podcast charts work, the thing that's got the most new listeners each week is at number one. That's how they measure it. So you're, as far as I'm concerned, I think I'm right in saying your podcast is sometimes number one, has been in the top, not that you care, but for the sake of this, it's quite high up the charts. And 49th is not a correct representation of how popular it is. That's what I thought when I heard that.
That's exactly what I thought when I heard that.
Well, the way you react is funny because you suddenly become your dad. And then you become aware that
49?
You become aware that you reacted quite strongly. And then you can hear yourself in the background going, I was joking. You say under your breath.
I know. You are absolutely correct. You know my mind, my squirmy mind.
But listen, I don't want to make a big thing out of it. What I want to make out of it is a jingle for you. So I made a jingle for you. Here we are.
Considering how many podcasts there are out there and the fact that yours is the 49th.
No, 49th?
49th.
No, 49th?
49th. 49th. 49th most popular in the UK. 49th.
49th?
49th.
49th?
49th. 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 Don't worry, I'll move up. 49th.
49th?
49th.
49th.
49th. That's an extraordinary testament to how good you are at what you do. 49th.
It's not an extraordinary testament to how good you are at what you do to be 49th.
I mean, it's just never a good number. And of course, in his mind, he's thinking like, yeah, but if you think about the thousands of podcasts available,
no, he's a brilliant DJ, but I don't know what he's saying there.
Yeah.
It feels like he's damning you with faint praise.
I know. In that moment, you know how like your brain short circuits, your insecurities take hold in those pressured moments. I think I sort of thought like, is he taking the piss? 49 is not a good number. I mean, of course it is. In the scheme of things, there are thousands of podcasts out there.
No, it's not a question of modesty. It's a question of facts.
Right.
And I look at those charts and you're usually top 10.
I mean, I have
at least top 20 material. Yeah, but they work, as I say, on the amount of new listeners something gets, which keep. But anyway, I thought that made me laugh. And there's a certain amount of pleasure I take in hearing you humiliated.
Christmas in this country, J. Korn, has traditionally been associated with a few festive figures apart from Santa. Can you name the main ones of those festive figures? Correct. First on the list. Yes.
The two Ronnies. No, Morecambe and Wise with their Christmas specials that get repeated ad nauseam.
Try and get a bit more up to date. Stay telly, but get a bit more up to date.
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch telly at Christmas. Go on. Tell me.
Mrs. Brown.
Okay, fair enough.
Idris Elba doing the Sky ads.
Yes.
Jimmy Carr, obviously.
Obviously.
But the big one, the big perennial figure, apart from Santa, associated with Christmas, year upon year, for time immemorial, is...
the Queen.
Laura Queen.
Her match.
How much longer, however, at this point, we have to consider, will the Queen be part of our lives?
A lot longer, Adam.
I hope so.
I mean, she'll always be part of our lives.
I mean, the thing is that apart from the fact that she is now 94, she and the rest of the royal family are in the process of trying to withstand an unprecedented, I'm going to use that word, assault in the form of the TV series The Crown.
Mm.
Have you seen any of the fourth series of The Crown?
I have seen a little bit of it, yeah.
What do you make of it?
Well, I like the scene where Princess Diana was dressed as the little sort of Shakespearean Midsummer Night's Dream fawn.
Okay, that was fairly early on in the season.
I've only seen the first episode. Not because I don't want to see it, just pressure of time. And she's sort of hoppity-skippeting behind plant pots in the lobby of a very massive house and a young Prince Charles.
My wife loves The Crown.
Ooh, that's changed. That's strange. It's not robotic anymore. That was more...
It was a little strangled.
Yeah, it was.
My wife loves The Crown.
Mm. It's like a man who lives in the air conditioning system, whose wife's divorced him,
like,
but he snuck back into the
from
house.
The X-File.
Yeah, he lives in the air, and he's just looking at her at the end of a steel tunnel, plaintively going, "My wife, like she used to be his wife."
Anyway, so when I'm not doing that, we are watching The Crown, and for anyone who has successfully managed to avoid the whole thing, congratulations. But let me tell you that it is a biographical series that has stirred up quite a bit of controversy for playing pretty fast and loose with the actual facts of history. And Peter Morgan, who has written, I think, every episode,
yes,
confessed basically to saying, yeah, I made quite a bit of it up. But, I mean, it's true in spirit. He's saying, yes, it's based on actual things that happened in history, but, yeah, we've monkeyed around with the chronology and sometimes with the actual facts of how things happened. But the spirit is true, and we've stuck to that, as if you can measure that. So it's weird watching it because, especially for someone who grew up in the 80s, there's all these incidents that I remember very clearly absorbing via the news, but not really caring about at the time and not really being fully aware of. You know, it was just you couldn't really avoid them. So most of these stories pop up in one way or another in The Crown. However, for someone like you, Jay Korn, who hasn't watched the whole thing, I thought it would be a good opportunity to give you a little quiz. And so what I've done is come up with three Crown-style historical scenarios featuring prominent members of the royal family, a lot of Queen, Charles, Diana, and Prince Philip. And these are based on historical, cultural moments from the 80s. But the question is, were they in The Crown? And second question, did they really happen at all?
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. So were they dramatized in The Crown?
Were they dramatized in The Crown?
Did they happen? Yeah. This is good.
And did they happen?
How many are there?
Three.
Okay.
Now, the question is, do you think I need to explain the impression of the Queen that I do?
No.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, the explanation would be so convoluted and drain all the humour out of it. That's what I would caution against. And B, you know, just deal with it.
All right. Here we go. This is scene one from Buckle's version of The Crown.
Right, Princess Diana, you got to go to a Laura glamorous premiere tonight, and it's a full of film splash. It's directed by Ron Howard from Happy Days, and it's got a Laura Darren Hannah in it as a mermaid. Sounds crap, but you got to go.
I don't mind. I like pop culture, because I'm nice and normal, not a horrible posh monster like you.
Well, you're quite posh yourself, Laura Blind of Data.
Is Prince Charles coming to the premiere of Splash?
No, sorry, I'm Prince Philip. Charles can't come to the premiere of Splash. He's having his affair tonight with Camilla.
Well, maybe if there's someone really nice in Splash, I'll meet them at the premiere and we'll become friends.
Hello, I'm Michael Burke, and this is a fake 80s news report from the premiere of Splash, where Princess Diana is saying hello to the cast.
Hello.
Hi.
I thought you were very good in the film Splash.
Thank you.
What's your name?
I'm Tom Hanks, Princess Diana. I'm just about to become a big star.
Wow, that's great. You seem really nice.
I am really nice. I'm Tom Hanks. I'm one of the nicest guys in the world.
Oh, will you become one of my closest showbiz friends?
Yeah, sure. That would be great. There's a snake in my boot.
Oh.
There we go. That's the end of that first scenario.
That's exciting. So I want to know what happens next with the snake.
Of course. So the two questions you have to answer are, was that event featured in The Crown?
No.
Correct. We did not see Princess Diana going to the premiere of Splash in 1984.
Did she go to the premiere of Splash? Oh, but that's the next question. Did it happen? Yeah.
Did it happen?
Of course it did. I bet you she did.
Incorrect.
Is that true?
She did not go to the premiere of Splash. Of course she didn't go to the premiere of Splash.
Why not? It's a big movie. It's a big hit.
It was a surprise hit.
Yeah, by the time it came to the UK, it was a big hit.
It wasn't a royal premiere big hit.
It could have been. It could have been.
No.
There's a six-month delay between the US and UK releases.
However, she did attend a premiere of a Ron Howard film where she did meet Tom Hanks. And it was nearly 10 years later in the 90s.
Apollo 14, 13, probably.
Correct. It was Apollo 13. That's where, as far as I'm aware, that's where she first met Tom Hanks. Anyway, here is scenario number two. And this is Saturday, the 13th of July, 1985, Wembley Stadium.
Oh, I know that date.
Yep. And here we join one of the big bands who were performing at the venue that day as they come off stage.
Whoa, yeah. Well done, John and Roger and the other two guys. That was a cool Live Aid set we just did.
Hello.
Hi.
You're Simon Le Bon, aren't you? From Duran Duran.
Yes, I am Simon Le Bon. That's right. Do you like our music?
Yes, I do. I love it.
Coolie.
Sometimes I skateboard round Buckingham Palace listening to
Ooh.
It, wearing leg warmers and dealy boppers.
Sorry.
And it makes my family really angry because they're boring and uptight and I'm nice.
Yes, you are nice. Would you
Quiet,
like...
you creep.
Okay.
Diana and Prince Charles, I think we should go. I want to carry on my affair with Camilla Parker Bowles and shoot an animal because I'm horrible.
But Charles, it's time for the biggest act of the day.
Hello, Laura, Laura, Live Aid. Are you ready for Queen? Laura. Laura Lullybeef. Laura, Laura Lullybeef, a blender data. That's great, chocolate data.
I don't want that to stop. I don't want it to end. I want to hear the whole set. Queen at Live Aid, of course.
Of course. Anyway, would you like to tell me if that scene or any version of it was depicted in The Crown?
Well, it did happen.
The Queen wasn't there, though.
No, but Queen did perform at Live Aid and Di
Queen performed at
Charles
Live Aid.
And Di were there.
The Queen didn't. Charles and Diana were there. Duran Duran were not there. They were at JFK Stadium in America.
Thanks for correcting me on that. That one.
The Queen didn't actually perform.
You sounded grumpy when you said it, as if... and what's the second question? Did it happen in the... Well, I don't know. On the one hand, Live Aid's been so thoroughly done by the movie, the Queen movie, that maybe they wouldn't have trodden the same ground. On the other hand, it's such a culturally important event. I'll say yes, they did.
No, they didn't. But I think they should have done. Can you imagine? It would have been so fun. Because
it's
the whole fun of The Crown, I think, apart from the fact that people are interested and emotionally invested in Diana especially, but it has the power of the bad biopic. People love a bad biopic.
Yeah. Listen, do they in The Crown introduce themselves by their names in every scene?
Well, here's another scene. I mean, yes is the answer. Yeah, they do.
They?
But and that makes it much easier to tell who everyone is.
Yeah.
That's the genius of Peter Morgan.
Yeah.
It's very useful shorthand for a biopic. If you can't be absolutely certain that you can rely on the performance from the actor, just pop in a line that says something like who they are. And then job done.
Yeah.
So here's the final clip. This is a meeting between the Queen and a certain Lady Prime Minister.
Her Majesty the Queen will see you now, Mrs. Thatcher.
Thank you.
Hello, Your Majesty. How wonderful to see you, F.O. I'm Margaret Thatcher, Scully.
Oh, shut up, isn't it, bloody Margaret Thatcher. Why don't you do a Laura Laura sanctions against the apartheid regime of South Africa, bloody racist, isn't it?
I know, but unfortunately, Your Majesty, it's just not that simple. I'm Margaret Thatcher!
Yeah, all right, shut up, Margaret Thatcher, Laura Laura. You know, some people think I'm frosty and uncaring, but compared to you, Margaret Thatcher, I'm really nice, a lolly beef, innit?
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, Your Majesty, but the truth is out there, and I'm Margaret Thatcher!
Oh, no, don't do that. Come on, Chucka, Laura Laura, shut up. Oh, thank goodness.
That's good.
So that is a meeting between the Queen and the Premier at the time, Margaret Thatcher, mm-hmm. played in The Crown brilliantly by Gillian Anderson. Mm. Now, there were some references to a previous role that Gillian Anderson played. Mm. Did you pick up on any of those?
I didn't really have to pick up on them because they were like rammed into my face. It was more a question of peeling them off me than picking them up.
Scrubbing them off with a great
scrubbing them off
with steel wool.
But I appreciate how you're positioning this.
Come on.
So that, I mean, there's been some controversy, particularly around their portrayal of Thatcher's meeting with the Queen, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've read bits and bobs about it that apparently people think it's not very accurate. But I don't know the details. So the first question is, did that happen in The Crown?
Was it in The Crown? Was that scene portrayed in The Crown?
Yes.
Correct.
Do you watch that sort of thing and think, this is a couple of jokes away from a comedy sketch?
Do you mean, do I watch a show like The Crown?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Because it's actors doing impressions of famous people.
Yeah. When Gillian Anderson first appears as Thatcher, I just laughed and laughed and laughed. She's made the decision to go really hard on the impression.
I
and
find
really
that with
big.
Movies as well, like the Freddie Mercury movie. Am I alone or does everyone sort of... Is that part of the enjoyment of stuff like that?
Yeah,
like,
I think it is, yeah. Because I want to complete my thought about Gillian Anderson. Mm. It's a brilliant portrayal and it's a brilliant impression. Mm. It's not such a big and mad impression that it prevents you from engaging with the character.
Mm.
She's amazing. But it is big and you have to adjust. It's not like when Meryl Streep played Thatcher. She did something far more low-key, I think.
Yes.
And that was clearly a decision that she made. But no, Gillian went the opposite way. And it's tremendous. Hey, look, speaking of the royals, as we speak, a few days ago, there was a trailer that hit the media for a new podcast, which is another threat to the high chart position of this one, 49, mm-hmm. and it is by Harry and Meghan. Have you heard that podcast trailer?
I haven't heard it. I read about it. There was a piece in a newspaper that was sort of breaking it down, saying that their trailer for their podcast sort of hits all the class. There's basically a set of sort of cliches now for podcasts, and the article was saying that theirs sort of adheres to the cliche template to a ridiculous extent.
I would say that's true. I've done a version of the beginning part of the trailer, just to give you an idea of what you're dealing with.
Shall I start, or do you want to start, Meghan, because you're a beautiful lady?
No, why don't you start? Because you have a sexy British accent like James Bond.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, listen to that accent. Oh,
I've never really had a compliment from a lovely, lovely woman before.
Uh-huh, okay.
Actually, just before we start, I think I've had a really good idea.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know these bits with us just talking like normal people before we start doing the trailer?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we keep them in the trailer at the beginning?
Sure.
Don't you think that would be quite fun?
Yeah. Okay, let's do Harry's idea.
And we should start, yeah. Hi, guys. I'm just a guy, and I'm called Harry.
And I'm the Duchess of Meghan. And one of the things that me and my husband always talk about is how much we love talking to other people. And saying things like, what do you do? And, oh, that's interesting. And then talking about ourselves.
And that's what this project is all about. I'm not reading these words off a piece of paper. I'm just thinking them up with my head, then saying them like a guy would when he talked to you.
This has been a really hard year.
but it's reminded us that people can be amazing, and those are the people we're going to be talking to on the podcast. And the first episode will be...
a Christmas special.
Harry, don't say the C word.
Sorry.
A holiday special.
A lum dum dum dum, holiday, holiday, yum yum yum.
Uh-huh, what is that?
I'm just doing some mad singing, you know, like normal people do, and I thought we could keep it in the trailer like before.
All right, I'll do some too. Ding, 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 ding.
Holiday, 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 yum, yum, yum. I love podcasts, Megan. They're so informal.
So that's a kind of satirical takedown of the trailer that they've made. And large sections of it are accurate.
I haven't heard the real trailer.
It's like that.
Is it really like that?
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
Oh, no.
Oof. I mean, first of all, I want to know, I'm not going to rehash all the things that everybody has said about this thing so far. I think, fine, good luck to them, have fun. I'm sure they'll have access to some genuinely interesting people. Go for it. But, you know, first Louis, who really doesn't need to do a podcast, comes and just absolutely tramples all over my patch. Now it's Harry and the Duchess of Meghan. They've got other things that they could do, surely. Why do they need to come and jump about in my private playground?
It's one of the last surviving forms of media that's like pandemic proof.
Exactly.
Isn't it? That's why LT jumped in, because he couldn't do roving reporting.
Lou through, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm being nudged out is what I'm saying. I'm being progressively nudged out of the picture by some heavy hitters. Yeah. Who do you think they will get on the podcast? What kind of guests?
Well, I think they could get... who would they get? Like, maybe Tim Vine?
He'd be good.
He would be good. I think it should just be you and Richard Herring. Take it in turns.
Take it in turns. Yeah. With Richard Herring asking Harry if he's ever sucked his own cock. And asking Megan if she would prefer a ham hand or an armpit that dispenses sun cream.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Well, it's that time, man.
Oh, I forgot about this. I thought we were just going to wrap things up. But of course, there's one outstanding thing.
There is the outstanding thing.
The doodle story. So the doodle story. So for people who might be new to this podcast, should we bring them up to speed on what the doodle story is?
Yeah.
So this is a story I don't even remember.
Year five.
So I started telling a story about when I first met Tom Cruise. I can't even remember how it came up.
Well, you had told me the story after it happened.
Yes.
And it was a sort of mildly amusing story.
Yeah.
And I think in the course of talking about you having gone on the set of The Force Awakens, the new Star Wars film, you'd been invited there by J.J. Abrams.
Yes.
And that kind of name-droppy Hollywood chat made me think of your Tom Cruise doodle story. And I said, oh, what was that thing that happened with you and Tom Cruise?
But why did I not tell it all the way through the first time?
Because you just suddenly went all weird and like, oh, I don't think I should tell this story because I'm in the Dream Factory. And when you're in the Dream Factory, you're not supposed to tell tales. Or I don't know what it was, but you refused to tell the whole story.
Right. And anyway, for the last for the last 5 years, I've been drip feeding the story. And the story, can you tell me, let's hear the story from your perspective. What is the story?
Man. The story is... you had been drafted in, you and Edgar Wright, to do some writing on Steven Spielberg's version of Tintin.
Yes.
And you were out in Los Angeles having a meeting with Spielberg.
Yes.
Peter Jackson was either in the room or on a conference call or not involved at all.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg was in the room. Nick Frost was in the room. They were both doing voices.
That's all debatable. Nick being in the room is debatable.
All right. Nick being in the room is debatable.
All these facts are wobbly.
You are scribbling away, doodling on a notepad.
I'm drawing a picture of... I'm going to take the reins. I'm drawing a picture of Snowy, and I haven't completed his front left leg. And Tom Cruise comes in, says hello to everybody, sits down next to me. The conversation's drifting in other directions between Spielberg and co. Tom turns to look at my drawing. I'm drawing Snowy the dog. He says, is that your doodle? I said, yeah. He said, that's a good doodle. He said, thanks, man. And then he picks up the pen and goes, can I doodle? I said, yeah, sure, go ahead. So, but instead of drawing a hoof, he draws, it's as if he suddenly doesn't trust me or where the doodle will go, so he just draws a black square. This is the sixth time a lot of people are hearing this story.
He loses confidence in the hoof.
He loses confidence in the hoof. This is my, I'm not sure that's what happened, but this is what I imagine.
It's like a Bible story. It's a timeless narrative that is handed on from generation to generation.
Yeah, and it's like Chinese whispers. It changes each time. It's exaggerations and embellishments. And he's maybe thinking, man, I have no idea whether this hoof I'm drawing will turn into some massively extended, drip-fed story in a very popular Top 49 podcast. It's probably what he's thinking.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that to happen, he's thinking.
He's thinking, no. So instead of drawing a hoof, he just draws a black square, which can be seen on my Instagram page, Mr. Joe Cornish.
There you go.
You can see the actual doodle. And then he holds up the piece of paper and he turns to Spielberg and sort of interrupts him and says, hey, Steven, I've given Snowy a hoof. And Spielberg turns around and says to him... This is where it ended. Is that as far as it goes? And Spielberg says, oh, that's great, Tom. And that's the end of the story. Adam, hello?
Wait.
Let's move on quickly.
I'm still processing.
You know this story. This is not new to you.
I'd forgotten it. And the thing is that with a punchline like that, it's not necessarily going
to
lodge in the memory for however long it's been. 10 years since I first heard the story.
Listen.
And then 5 years since you've been spinning it out.
Full transparency. The weakness of the punchline is one of the reasons I've been spinning it out. Try and delay the moment.
What kind of emotional turmoil? Did you ever, like, lie awake at night sweating, thinking, I'm going to be unmasked at some point. At some point, this will end. And then I'm going to be dragged through the streets and dismembered.
No, because luckily, something else happened that takes the story into a whole new realm, which is at the beginning of this year, pre-lockdown, Adam and I were invited to Simon Pegg's 50th birthday party.
On the 14th of February, 2020, Valentine's Day, and warning, there is going to be all the name dropping.
And I have to say, like, even before that party had happened, I'd spoken to Simon and said, look, I'm in a bind with this Tom Cruise story. The punchline is very, very weak. I've stretched it out over 5 years. And last year, people were genuinely angry about it. So get me out of a hole. Get me in. I want Tom to come on the podcast and I need to discuss it with him. That's the only way out of the hole. Simon said, absolutely fine. Tom will be up for that. We'll arrange it. Come and visit the set of the new Mission Impossible film. Adam can come too. We'll record a brilliant bit. It'll be hilarious. Then the pandemic hits, right? But before the pandemic, we get invited to the party.
Right. So you're setting up stuff I didn't know. I didn't realize that it was a possibility that we might actually record with TC. So listeners, you must be made aware now that that did not happen. There's not a bit of audio of Tom Cruise talking about the doodle story that I'm going to unveil at the end of this podcast. Sorry, but no.
It could have happened, but two things happened first. Simon's 50th party happened first, and Adam and I both turned up at Simon's 50th birthday party. And lo and behold, who was there?
Well, I'll tell you who was there before we get to the obvious guest of honour.
Right.
I mean, this is a star-studded party, so as well as members of Simon's friends and family, we are looking at J.J. Abrams, Gillian Anderson, a.k.a. Mrs. Thatcher, Olivia Colman, a.k.a. Laura, the Queen, Bill Bailey, the comedian, Jeremy Dyson, Mark Gatiss from The League of Gentlemen, Chris Martin from Coldplay, Joe Wiley, Radio 1, Radio 2 DJ, Edgar Wright, Henry Cavill, Superman and co-star of Mission Impossible 5, 6, I don't know. Anyway, you got Laura stars there, right? But it wasn't definite that Tom Cruise was going to turn up. But we were all saying, like, do you think Tom Cruise will come? Sure enough, fairly early on in the party, the doors open and in comes Tomcat. And I was talking to Joe, facing away from the door, and Joe goes, Tom Cruise, Tom Cruise, Tom Cruise, don't turn around, don't turn around, don't turn around. So I almost immediately turned around. And there he was, and it was quite crazy.
I'm excited for you, because yeah. I'm always rubbing it in your face that I've met him.
Yes.
And then I thought, this is an amazing moment. Now Adam's going to get to experience what I'm so used to.
I noticed that you didn't immediately go over and say, hey, Tom, nor did he do that with you.
No, that's true.
You were both playing it quite cool.
Well, it was a very busy party.
It was a busy party. Mm. Anyway, none of us went over to Tom Cruise, because even though Jay Korn had his amazing doodle story experience with him and may have had other experiences, I don't know, it wasn't appropriate in that moment. And the force field of the sheer celebrity around him was such that you just didn't feel able to pierce it. And it wasn't because he had a big entourage or was putting on airs or anything like that.
Didn't
it was
have
just
any
like,
entourage.
No, it was just like, that is Tom Cruise. He's been in
you say that,
a lot of films.
But lots of people going up and talking to him. He's not an unapproachable person. He's famous for that. Even at premieres, he's like famous for signing absolutely every single autograph and hanging around with people. I don't think he's unapproachable at all. And in fact, later in the evening, you know, the sort of very drunk person that you get trapped with at a party.
I saw that guy too.
Yeah, well, it was a woman I saw, but several very drunk people were just literally pinning him, not literally pinning him down, but, you know, talking to him in such a way as I felt, oh, should I go and rescue him from that person? Just like you would any person at a party.
I noticed that happening too, but I also noticed that no one was rescuing him. I was thinking, man, that must be a nightmare. And that must be why he doesn't probably go to a lot of parties, I would imagine, if he's got any sense. But he was there for ages. Usually what happens with big stars turning up at a party is they go there, they get their picture taken, and then they're out as quick as possible, in my limited experience of megastar parties. But he was there for a good 3-4 hours or something.
But it was a very personal, private friends party, wasn't it?
Yeah. And yeah, it was.
All these people are genuinely Simon's friends, right?
That's right.
It's not like the launch party for a new fragrance or something.
No, it was a good scene, good vibe.
It was a proper party with lots of friends, some of whom happened to be famous.
Yeah. And for that reason, I didn't immediately start planning to invade the Tomsphere.
Well done.
I just thought, oh, well, there he is. Let him enjoy his party. I'm not going to go over and start being a dick.
But later you did.
Well, later on, I was at the bar chatting to Kevin Eldon, and suddenly I feel two hands being laid on my two shoulders, and it is Simon Pegg.
Yes.
And he's saying, come with me.
This is because I said to Simon, hey, Simon, introduce Adam to Tom. You've got to get Adam to speak to Tom. Simon
right,
said,
okay.
And this is what happened.
So he literally manhandled me over, marched me across the room, and I could see Joe and my wife over in the corner watching me and laughing. And I'm thinking, oh, man, here we go, here we go. But it was too quick because I wasn't mentally prepared at all. And I hadn't imagined that I would be saying anything to Tom Cruise. And suddenly, within a few seconds, I was standing right in front of him. And he was there with a small group of people that included Edgar Wright was talking to him, and Henry Superman Cavill, and Christopher McQuarrie, who's the director of Mission Impossible 5 and the new movie. And they're just having a little chat. And suddenly, Simon has maneuvered me right in front of him. And he says, this is Adam Buxton. I think he said, this is the guy I told you about.
Yes.
They told the story about you doodling on Joe's notepad when we were doing Tintin. And they talked about it on their podcast. And so he sort of set it up in that way. And then I think he buggered off. And suddenly I was just stood right in front of Tom, and Edgar was there, and I could see Edgar. He was looking like, how's this going to go? What's Adam going to say? Is this going to be excruciatingly embarrassing, or is this going to be fine? Anyway, suddenly I'm confronted by Tom Cruise. He's the same height as me, by the way. and I'm looking into his Tom Cruise eyes. And his laser focus is boring right into my brain. And he is doing his special connection tricks with me, double handshake. And he's giving me the megawatt smile, saying, "Hi, good to meet you. Hi. Hi, Adam." Using my name and everything. And I'm on. And it's like, what am I going to say? And I'll tell you over the next 25 minutes. No, I won't, because I'm not what? Insane. And also, there's no story.
That didn't stop me.
That didn't stop you. But listen, we have to learn from some of our previous historical crimes.
Mm.
And there's no way that I'm spinning this story out, because it's really not that extraordinary. But it was kind of a cool moment, because there was so much computation going on in my mind and also in his. And it gave me a chilling insight into what his life must be like moment to moment. Because I could see him trying to calculate, like, what is going on here? Who is this guy that Simon's just suddenly shoved in front of me? And so I started babbling about, like, yes, Joe Cornish, he was working on Tintin, and he apparently was doodling away on a pad. You came over. And so I basically told the story again about, like, the doodle story. And I could see him sort of, his brow was furrowing a little bit. He was looking at me, looking a bit confused. It was a very faint bit of confusion. And I could see him thinking, like, is this true? Is this guy telling me something true? Or is he taking the piss? Is this a prank? I could see him running through all the possibilities. And then at the end of my thing, I said, do you remember that happening, Tom? And he said, yeah, I remember it really well. And he sort of over-egged it, like, and I knew, like, no, you don't remember it. But he dug in and he said, yeah, sure, I remember. Yeah. And in a way that didn't invite any further inquiry on that subject.
He was humouring you.
I think he was humouring me, but he was doing it in a very nice way. But at that point, I was just thinking, wow, this is crazy. I'm in his tractor beam and I'm looking into the eyes of this guy that I've only ever seen on the big screen, whose movies I've enjoyed, who is a strange, confusing figure of pop culture, who, as we speak, is all over the newspapers for losing his temper on the set of Mission Impossible 7, who is a figure of sort of fascination, really, and one of those people who, whether you like him or not, is a pivotal cultural figure. And it's always weird to be in the physical space of one of those people, you know what I mean?
You were starstruck.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
And also, it quickly became obvious that he's quite charming, you know, and his little techniques or natural charm, whatever you want to think of them as, of making eye contact and not breaking it and using your name a lot and all that stuff, it really works and makes you feel sort of special. So what I did was I thought, okay, I don't really want to spend too much time here because it's too freaky. And I don't really have anything to say. But what I do want to do is reassure him that I'm not here to take the piss or try and score points off him or humiliate him or embarrass him, really. So what I did was I started enthusing genuinely about Mission Impossible 5, the Fallout one, with the helicopters and the big fight with Henry
Fallout.
Cavill.
Fallout,
yeah. And I started talking about how great I thought it was, which I really did.
Comfortable territory.
Absolutely terrific.
Yeah.
And I started enthusing about it and describing the scenes and sort of analyzing them in a very, you know, listeners, the kind of way that I sometimes do, in a very insightful, articulate way that really makes you think about these things in a way that you might never have done before. And I could see that he liked it and Chris McQuarrie, the director, liked it. And I was saying things like, you know, it was so well directed, Chris McQuarrie, the director.
It's a good
insight. A great job you did, because sometimes with those big fight scenes, the action can get too crazy and hectic. It's hard to tell what's going on. A bad director won't handle those things well. But you just knew exactly what to do to show the audience where they were from moment to moment. And it was so thrilling. You felt like you were there. And I thought I was doing pretty well. What do you reckon?
I think that's a very safe... You were on very safe ground.
Yeah, I was massively licking their bums.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's a good... I'm disappointed you didn't press him harder about the doodle story.
I just couldn't. Because he didn't remember it, Joe.
Do you think?
Yes, I think.
Do you think he possibly didn't remember who I am?
I think there's a chance.
I know Chris McQuarrie knows who I am.
Yeah.
And I think Tom does recognise me, but I'm not sure I'm central to his world.
I'm just saying it's a possibility. You're more central, of course, than I am. You are right close in his orbit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And listen, I know he loves your film. He did a special screening of Attack the Block for his friends.
That's true, yes.
He knows who you are in that respect. But doodle story-wise, I was getting nothing.
Yeah.
And in the end, one of the things I did, because I suddenly thought like, oh, I've got a genuine question for him, which was, how do you get insurance when you're doing all the stunts and when you clearly injure yourself? There was that thing where he broke his foot. I was like, so I start asking him this question.
Good question.
I was like, how do you, I often think like, how is it logistically possible for you to get insurance for the productions when you are so public about doing your own stunts? And then when you get into a situation where you broke your foot, didn't you, during the production of the last film? And he says, I shattered it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was right close, really intense. And he's like, no, I didn't break it. I shattered it.
He would be an amazing Blue Peter presenter, don't you think? Him and Rebecca and Henry Cavill doing a big budget Blue Peter film.
Yes.
Don't you think, like, abseiling
Tom Cruise
off,
would be Noakes.
He'd be Noakes. Cavill would be Purvis. And Rebecca Ferguson would be...
Valerie Singleton.
Cruise would zip line off the top of Tower Bridge and then, like, ruffle a dog's head. People would love it.
I would love it.
I mean, that's sort of what Mission Impossible movies are, really, in some ways. They could do some makes in between the action sequences. You know, chase around Paris, then show you how to make a fairy castle out of toilet rolls.
Yeah. Anyway, all this bants is probably cold comfort for a sizable proportion of the podcast listenership that are still reeling from the punchline of your 5-year Tom Cruise.
Well, thanks for helping me. Thanks for helping me out there by taking the reins and telling an equally disappointing story about meeting Tom Cruise at a party.
About meeting Tom Cruise. I'm trying to think of what else.
At least you got it over faster than I did.
My only victory, was it a victory? I don't know what it was. Anyway, to conclude, I was talking to Tom and I felt like I'd made a couple of connections with him. I'd licked his bum quite a lot. I think he liked it. And I said the thing about, you broke your foot. I shattered it, he said. And then he told me a little bit more about how intense the fight with Henry Cavill in the urinals was and how they really hurt each other when they were doing that scene and they were really punching. And it was great. And then I just thought, I don't think it's going to get better than this. I'm just going to cut out. Yep. And it's going to be kind of a novelty for him that will probably increase his respect for me and make him want to see me again. If I just say, all right, I'm going to go. See you. Bye. So I said, hey, listen, Tom, thank you so much. Good to talk to you. Lovely to meet you. Shook his hand. Great to meet you, Adam, he said. And off I went.
That's not what I saw.
What did
you see? I saw you following him around for the rest of the party, desperately trying to talk to him, following him out of the venue, trying to get into his car, being wrestled away from him by the security staff of the venue, then running down the motorway towards London in the rain after his car.
With my pants off.
Throwing homemade CDs of your podcast at him. That's what I saw.
That was Louis Theroux.
Hey, Tom Cruise, before you go, I just wanted to tell you one more interesting thing. I've still got my cuddly teddy bear from when I was little. What about you?
That's what I sleep with every night.
Same here. Makes me feel happy and reminds me of mummy and daddy.
That's it.
Yeah, we love teddies.
No apologies.
No apologies.
That's it.
That's it. Teddies are the best. Hey, Tom, you should see the film Paddington.
I don't ever want to see it again.
What about Christmas?
Ever.
Oh, dear. I've seen it loads of times. It's heartwarming and ingenious. I watched the sequel several times, too.
Don't ever do it again.
Okay.
Is it understood?
Why not give it one more go? We can watch it with Joe.
If I see it again, you're gone. And so are you.
I'm Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, no, shut up, bloody Margaret Thatcher. Stop it.
you're gone. And you're gone.
Wait.
This is an advert for Squarespace.
Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right, stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No, it's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial and I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Continue.
49th.
Hey, welcome back, Festive Podcats. Wow, the doodle story has finally been laid to rest. Who knows what we're going to find to talk about in next year's Christmas podcast. Thanks very much to Simon Pegg for letting me talk about his party. And actually, more importantly, for inviting me to his party. It was really fun. Thanks, Simon. So anyway, as I said, I'm going to keep it short because it is nearly dark out here on Christmas Eve and very cold. My fingers are nearly falling off, even though I am wearing gloves. Hey, look, I don't normally do shout outs on the podcast, but I did want to send particularly warm wishes to Romy, a podcat from Ireland. Romy lost her daughter Hazel this year, and I just want to join Romy's boyfriend Chris, who got in touch, and all their family and friends who have rallied round this year, as so many people have had to do in 2020, and say, I'm sorry, and just to send a lot of love. I hope you're all right, Romy, from me and all the rest of the podcasts, if I may speak for you all. I also wanted to send my love to my brother, Uncle Dave, and to my sister, Claire. I'll be missing them this Christmas very much. They're locked down in London. Especially as Mum and Dad aren't around this year. And I don't think they're going to be around next year either, to be honest. I'm pretty sure it's Boris's fault. Anyway, Claire and Dave, we'll get together soon. And you are really going to love your presence. Especially the song I've done about a dream I had where I breastfed Tom Cruise to stop him shouting at me. I think you'll find that one quite moving. A few thank yous before I go. I mean, there's so many people I feel like saying thank you to, who I have been thanking a little bit throughout the year, especially all of you who were so kind to me after my mum died. It really made a difference, especially this year when everything is so unsettling and crazy and scary anyway. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks to all my guests this year. I'm sure Paul McCartney's going to be listening to this. Thanks, Paul. Really good to talk to you. You were much nicer than I expected. I mean, I already liked you, don't get me wrong. But I just found you inspiringly upbeat and optimistic. And I can't help feeling that's a valuable quality. Thank you so much to the Staves, who provided not only that song for Joe at very short notice, but also a lovely choral Taffin-based jingle in the podcast as well. As I said, there are links in the description of the podcast to a great Spotify playlist with their beautiful music on it, which would be suitable, I think, for any festive get-together or don't get-together. Oh, it's really, really dark now. There's just a crack of lighter sky over to the west where the sun set. But other than that, it is impenetrably dark. cloud. Can't see the moon or anything. Oh, so I'm going to head back. Thanks very much indeed to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for all his work on the podcast this year and especially on this episode. Really appreciate it, Seamus. I would struggle without you. Here comes the freezing rain. Thanks very much indeed to Matt Lamont for his brilliant edit with Bottery throughout the year and especially on this episode. And Matt, let me tell you, has recently set up his own podcast company called PodMonkey. If any of you podcats have a podcast that badly needs making, then get in touch. There is a link in the description of the podcast to the PodMonkey webpage. Thanks to Helen Green for her beautiful artwork. Can I just say, this is the least clement it has ever been on one of my walks, which sort of, I guess, is appropriate for this year, isn't it? But it is, oh man, it's so cold and it's so dark and it's so windy. Let's get out of this, Rose. I hope the podcast will be returning in March of 2020, late March, early April, sometime around then. Till then, take care. Hey, do you want a freezing rainy hug? Of course you do. Hey. Whoa. Whatever you do, don't forget, I love you!